Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformations. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TED Speaker, Business Positioning Strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 66 countries, such as the U.S., Canada, Brazil, Australia, New Zealand, Malaysia, the U.K., all across Europe. So I want to thank you to those. Oh, and Portugal. Can't forget Portugal. We are live right now on Blog Talk Radio Network on Life Transformation Radio. So I want to thank you to those who are listening around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight those transformational moments that have changed our lives and how we use this to help transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live right here at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and also check out our 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time episodes as well. You can join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community, and do not miss an episode by subscribing and then rate and review our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, The Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, and the Google Play Music app, or wherever you're comfortable listening to shows. On this show, I have entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, other coaches, podcasters, and authors who are amazing at what they do and are impacting the world around them. And my guest today does exactly that. If you have any questions for any of my guests during the live broadcast, you can call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. If you want to call in, talk to the guests, ask myself a question, I'd be more than happy to have you on the show. So please help me welcome to the show my friend Richard Kaufman. What's up, my brother?
Not much. Thank you very much. I'm so humbled to be on today. I know we've been talking back and forth for a while, so I'm very grateful that you had me on today.
Yeah, man. You know, you're doing a lot of great work in the addiction space, you know, and overcoming and the health and fitness. And, you know, so I just want to, you know, have you come on and kind of just highlight exactly what you're doing, because I know this month alone, it's tough. It's tough for people.
Yeah, they call this month and next month hurricane season. Because that's when the most people commit suicide, is during these 2 months.
Yep. Yeah, and then the addiction starts because all the family's coming over, and then old wounds are open, and it's just like, I don't know if Christmas ruins more families than Facebook cheating, but something about the holidays, and people dread the holidays, right?
I think what it is, a lot of people that, when you get together, they start talking about, you know, all the old times. And some people just, you know, they may not be that person that they used to be, but, you know, sometimes the family only remembers the way you used to be. So it kind of gets you really down and out.
Yeah, especially if you don't see them a lot. You know, you only see them, like, you know, a couple times a year, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, the title of this episode is Breaking Alcohol and Drug Addiction with Richard Kaufman. Richard's couple years in the military was so turbulent that he fell into a spiral of alcoholism and drug use, earning him a one-way trip out of the Army just after 2 years on active duty. Ultimately, though, he retired from the National Guard after a 24-year career. Drinking heavily isn't exactly unheard of in the Army, but Kaufman took it to another level because he's an alcoholic. He also took a liking to LSD. Kaufman, 49, first enlisted in the Army in 1986 and signed up to be a tanker, but shortly reclassified to a cavalry scout. Kaufman says he began drinking at 12 years old, but it was at Fort Hood, Texas, at his first duty station, where he says that he learned to drink professionally and get hooked on acid. After other than honorable discharge for non-conforming, Richard was in trouble with the law, and it was either go to jail or go to meetings. He chose the meetings. By the early 90s, he had been sober for a few years and had his life on track. That's when he decided that he didn't get enough of what the Army had to offer and enlisted as an infantryman, this time in the National Guard. He served in the New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and South Carolina State Guards until 2012, when a freak accident ended his military career for good. Kaufman was helping one of his friends park an up-armored Humvee as a ground guide, attached to nearly every performance. But in this case, the driver thought he was stepping on the brakes when he actually slammed his foot on the gas, running over Kaufman's entire right side of his body. The accident left him blind in his left eye, but he survived, a detail Kaufman says was possible because he was wearing a Kevlar helmet. Now, you can go to his website, thecomebackcoach.wordpress.com. Go check out his website. Find him on Facebook and other social medias. He is everywhere. So, after reading all that and knowing what we know, what would you say is your deep why for what you do?
Why? That's a great question. I think because... Well, like I said, I've been clean now. It'll be 31 years New Year's Eve. And what happened was when I got hurt, because I couldn't see anymore, so the military discharged me. And not only did I lose my vision, but I also lost my career. I planned on doing 30, but you know, I guess if you can't see, you can't shoot. So they don't need that. And I got into a deep, really deep, dark depression. But I didn't use. I didn't drug or I didn't drink. And then I just started finding my way out of it. And I doubled down on going to meetings and talking to people and you know, getting help from the VA system. And then I started thinking, wow, there's so many people out there that like me that probably need help but are afraid to ask for help. So I decided to put everything that's ever happened to me out in public and start actually helping people. Because what happened was about a year ago, I went on Donnie's podcast, Donnie Boyven.
Yep.
Success Champions. And we started talking about, you know, what I do now. You know, I'm in the health and fitness industry. You know, I got clients in the NFL, Major League Baseball, WWE. And then I told him my backstory. And I kept trying to go back to talking about now. He's like, no, I want to hear what happened before. He said, because that's what people really need to hear. You know, everybody loves a comeback story. And that's when I just started saying, you know, maybe I can help other people. Maybe there's a lot of veterans that are dealing with this but are afraid to speak out and talk to somebody. So I decided to be that, you know, that ear that people can bend and talk to.
That's awesome. Wow. So what would you say would be your transformational moment? Was it getting out of the army that was that transformational moment?
I can actually tell you when my whole thought process changed, because I got back in the National Guard in the military, and then I moved to South Carolina. Now, I wasn't drinking at the time, but I was still an asshole. I still had the same attitude. I just wasn't drinking. And I was due to be discharged at the end of September of 2001 again for failure.
Wow.
But because I grew up in New Jersey, about maybe 10 or 15 minutes away from the Twin Towers, the morning that 9/11 happened, I was sitting on my couch watching it. And because we knew people that were in the towers, something broke in me, you know, and I actually crumbled into my couch, and like something broke in my spirit, and I just decided from that moment on that if I still had a career at all, I was going to dedicate the rest of my career and the rest of my life to helping other people. And
wow.
So I went the next day and talked to my company commander, and I begged for another chance, and thank God they gave me another chance. And within 2 years, I won Soldier of the Year. And that's when I just decided that day. It was actually that morning you know, September 11th is when my whole life changed. And, you know, and that's, and even in my book, that's, you know, that's the opening chapter, you know, it's the day that shook me to my core. And that's from where everything started to, like, for my first 30 years of my life, I was always worried about myself. And the last 20 right. years, I've been worrying about everybody else.
Wow. That's awesome, man. Really appreciate you sharing that. So one of the things that I firmly believe is that day changed, you know, everybody, you know, and that was the day that I decided to go into the Air Force. You know, I was working at Discount Tire. I didn't have any purpose or passion or anything. I was just a warehouse manager at Discount Tire. And, you know, and 9/11 happened. And then I was like, that's it. Like, that's my purpose. That's what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, so, you know, it changed a lot of people that day. You know, 9/11 was, man, it definitely changed a lot of people.
And it's weird because, like, from where I'm sitting right now in my house, I can actually look and see the Freedom Tower.
Oh, wow.
From my front porch.
Right.
So it's kind of, and, you know, it's something that I see every day. And it kind of just gives me that push every single day to, you know, make a difference. And that's why the book that's coming out is called A Hero's Journey. But it's actually dedicated to the first responders that ran into the towers while everybody else was running away.
Wow. When's the...
And the proceeds are actually going to a large amount of the proceeds are actually going to a foundation that helps first responders that are struggling with depression, PTSD, TBI.
Right.
So that's why
very
cool.
Book
is not for me. It's actually to help other people.
Very cool, man. When is the book going to be available?
Well, like as you found out, I'm very technically unsavvy. So I actually wrote the ebook out by hand, literally by hand. And now last night I just finished putting it into Google Docs, and now I'm just doing my acknowledgments. Now you got to figure out how to print it out and how to do all the other stuff.
Wow.
So it's due to be out hopefully on the 18th. That's the goal date, 'cause it's my mom's birthday. So I wanted to give her as a birthday gift.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So what made you write the book?
You know, because people that like know me now, you know, they don't know me from when I, like my wife that I'm with now, she knew me like because we dated when we were like 13 or 14. So she knew me when I was the wild child. And now she knows me as, you know, the person that's the daddy, you know, that's the husband, the father. And most people only see me now as, you know, the husband, the father. Like right now, I'm actually drinking out of a mini cup with Minnie Mouse on it, you know. And from where I was at being a drug and alcoholic to now, you know, being the guy that I am today, most people don't know my backstory, you know, that I dropped out of school in ninth grade. I only have a ninth grade education. You know, most people don't know that I was living in a car, you know, homeless for a year. You know, most people don't know I was a drug addict. Because that's not the person I am today. And that's why I decided to put it out. Because this way I wanted to make money to help other veterans and first responders that are struggling. So, you know, and plus if you're an author, if you want to get on like, you know, Fox News and stuff to get the word out, it gives you a little bit, you know, that you know what you're talking about. You know, it's not like you're some dope off the street, you know?
Right.
And the hardest thing was it really, because like I said, I wrote it by hand, is I really had to go back through all my relationships and everything that happened in my past and find out, you know, if like I said, if I've been through three marriages, I'm the common denominator. You know what
yep.
I mean? Everybody else can't be wrong around me. It's got to be me.
Right.
So that's when I really had to do some work, you know, inside work, even though I've been doing that for 30 years now, but... You know, just these last couple of months, I've been just doubling down on, you know, figuring out who I am and, you know, where I want to be.
Yeah. So I know me coming into the military with the things that I had dealt with or didn't deal with, but trauma that I've been through really was a catalyst. Once I got into the military and found alcohol and got into that lifestyle, and you know, was that kind of the same for you? You found, you know, drugs and alcohol because that was just kind of the military lifestyle?
Not really. It's because, I mean, the only reason I joined the military was to get out of my hometown because, like I said, I quit high school and, you know, and I was 16 years old. So, and I was bumming around going from job to job. And I'm like, all right, you know, I went to see a recruiter and there was a big video of a tank jumping over a ravine. I was like, cool, I want to do that. And then when they told me that I'll get paid to do that, I was like, all right, let's do it. So not only was I getting able to drink, I was getting paid to drink. And that's when it just started a whole downfall. At, you know, because when I shipped back then, I joined when I was 16. You know, I shipped a week after I turned 17. So, you know, like,
really?
I'm with these guys, you know, I was with these, because this is back in 86. I'm old, you know, and you didn't even need the GED to join back then. And like I said, I only have a ninth grade education, you know, I mean, but I've read over 6,000 books, but I only have a ninth grade formal education. And then when I got to, you know, Fort Hood and, I couldn't drink legally, so I was 17. But most guys, you know, they partied in the barracks.
Right.
So, you know, I hung out with them and partied with them. And then I, you know, found acid and I tripped for like every weekend for like 2 years straight. And, you know, I liked the military, but the military didn't like me.
Yeah, right.
Know? And they kindly asked me to leave. And I got booted out after 2 years.
Wow. I didn't know that you could join the military that young back then.
Well, it was something called the DEP, the Delayed Entry Program.
Yeah.
And like I said, I shipped when I was 17. And,
oh,
17, because as long as your parents sign for you. You know,
oh, I got
signed you.
For
you to join. And I shipped. I turned 17 on the January 30th, and I left in February, March, something like that. So it wasn't too long after I turned 17 that I shipped.
Wow. Where is your training at?
I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky, and I graduated August 22nd, 1986. So we did the basic and AIT, everything, one station unit training.
Fort Knox.
And I get there, and I'm like, they tell me it's a dry county. I'm like, the hell's a dry county? You know, because I wanted to start partying then. And they're like, no, man, this is a dry county. You got to go to Louisville. So, yeah, I went home for a little while, and then I shipped out to Fort Hood.
Huh. Nice. Yeah, I was in San Antonio. And you don't get a chance to do anything, even in tech school. It's like they got you on lockdown so bad, you know. And now it's like
have,
if you even get caught underage drinking, you're kicked out. They don't even tolerate it anymore.
Oh, yeah. I would have been totally done. I probably wouldn't even made it to 2 years. I wouldn't even made it to basic because we had family leaving, you know, family day. And we went out to Louisville and got hammered.
Oh, wow.
So I wouldn't even made it through basic training if that's the case.
You don't think it was so you came in with that mentality then anyway.
What's that?
You came in with the mentality of drinking anyways. It wasn't like a military thing. You already had that mentality.
Oh, yeah. I was telling a story in my book, you know, the first drink I ever had was I was like 11 years old on New Year's Eve. And then I just started drinking after that whenever I could. So I was a full-blown alcoholic by the time I signed in.
Oh,
wow. Now I was just getting paid to drink.
Right.
That was my mentality. Like, all right, let's go see the world and party.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I had no allegiance to anything. I was just like, all right, let's see what I can get out of it. I never thought long term, like, you know, make it a career or anything like that.
Wow. So what was it that got you to kind of kick the habit and then start being an advocate for other people?
Well, what got me clean was I got back after being kicked out of the military. I, you know, became homeless and for a while living in my car and stuff. And then I decided to go to school to become a bartender. That was really smart. That was a really intelligent move.
Right.
And when I graduated from bartender school, one of my friends, he owned a bar in New Jersey. He happened to be a police officer. So he asked me if I wanted to bartend that New Year's Eve. So I got to work. Everything was going great. People were buying me drinks, and the money was flowing. The alcohol was flowing. I woke up the next morning. My phone was going off. It was him. He said, I'm on my way to come pick you up. You're going to jail. And I'm like, for what? And I had like $5,000 cash in my pocket. I robbed the place.
Oh, wow. And did you even know that
you
did it?
Yeah, so it came in. No, I was, and I don't even know how I got home. I don't even know how I drove home, nothing. I passed out, blacked out. And he picked me up. He said, you got 24 hours to, because I must have gave away like $1,000 worth of free drinks too. So I had to give him the cash I had in my pocket, plus, you know, whatever money was missing. And he's like, you got 24 hours to come up with it. So I came up with the money, thank God for my aunt and uncle. And he said, well, you got a choice. He said, you can either go to jail or you can go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And that's what I did. And I haven't had a drug or a drink since. And I hit like 360 meetings in a row or something stupid. And I just haven't, you know, had a drink since. And then I just started, since I started talking to Donnie, is when actually really started to put my story out there to help other people, because, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, on average, you know, 35 first responders a day commit suicide every day.
Wow.
And I wanted to get the word out there. Yeah. And that includes 22 veterans. And besides that, you know, the first responders, 108 suicides per day in the United States, one every 5 minutes. And that's when I decided, you know what, maybe my story can be used for good instead of, you know, just live, you know, I wanted to start living to help other people instead of, you know, I just wanted to give back and pay it forward. And it all started probably about a year ago on Donnie's podcast. That's where it all started. Thank him and Gary V. Those two that got me started.
Gary V. Why Gary V?
Because when I first started getting, you know, clear headed again after, you know, going to the VA and getting help, and I started to read a lot, and I started to read a lot of self help books. And all of a sudden, I see a lot of people that I, you know, looked up to or talked to, always mentioned this guy, Gary V. And I'm like, who is it? So I started watching his videos and started watching his tapes and reading his books. And then I actually got to meet him and hang out with him for a little while. And he said, you know, maybe you have a bigger purpose in life. And I was like, wow. And then, and that's where it all started, as him and Donnie are the ones that actually got me started talking, you know, doing the public speaking, doing the Facebook lives, doing the podcasts, stuff like that to help other people out. Because I say, you know, everybody loves a comeback story. So if your story can inspire somebody to actually come out and say, okay, I need help. If this guy can do it, if this guy can come back from all this shit, I can do it. And that's why, you know, that's why I put everything, you know, that I've ever done, I've put it out in social media. You know, there's nothing to hide. And it's
right.
Where people can say, you know, okay, you know, all right, you've been a drug addict, you know, you've been an alcoholic, you know, you've been homeless, but, you know, now he has a beautiful wife, a beautiful family, beautiful home, great business. I can do it. If he can do it, I can do it. And that's where it all started. And that's hopefully where it's going to be heading. My goal is to help 1 million people. That's the goal. I don't know if I ever will, but that's the goal.
It's a great goal, man. It's a really great goal.
And, you know, and thank God I have people like you, you're a great mentor in my life. Robert Garcia, you know, the warrior strategist, he's really helping me out. I have a lot of great people in my life, you know, and I'm just grateful that I have mentors like you guys, you know, even though I'm an old man and you guys are young bucks, you know, I'm appreciative that you guys are helping me along on my journey.
Yeah, man, we're all, you know, I did all the title of some chips, and I'm not in competition with anybody. There's 5 billion people on this planet, you know, I mean, the fact that you're going to reach 1 million people is like not even 10% of the planet. You know what I mean? Like, if you really think about big numbers and you think like Gary Vee calls it the macro, because I'm a huge Gary Vee fan. Some people hate that guy. I don't know. Some people just like, it's all about hustling.
Can't stand him.
My wife can't either. She hates him.
Like, I'll be listening to her. I'll be watching her. She'll be like, can you just shut that off, please?
Yep.
I'm like, but it's so real. But I listen to his podcast every day, you know, and everything is real what he's talking about.
Yep.
You know, like my podcast, I listen to your podcast every day. I listen to Ed Mylett's podcast. You know, those are people, you know, Donnie's people that I look up to. And hopefully, you know, like even Marshall wants to get me down to San Diego to help to go speak on some of his stages. You know, I think that's all coming down, you know, coming down the road. And that's why hopefully the book, when it comes out, you know, it'll get in people's hands. And maybe I'll, you know, get more people that are saying, you know what, come down. You know, maybe these kids need to hear it. Because I do speak. I speak in jails. I speak in schools. I speak in prisons. Eventually the ultimate goal is just be able to get in front of people and tell my story, you know.
Yeah.
And it's great. Like when I talk in front of kids, I give them – I have them put on an eye patch when I first start my speech, and they don't even know anything about it. And it's cool when you see like 100 kids there with eye patches on. And then when I tell my story and they take their eye patches off, they see have a different perspective on life, you know? Cause like when I talk to people, I'm like, just cover your left eye and try walking around like that all day long. It just gives you a different perspective on life, you know? And that there's no way, you know, like I'm like probably one of the humblest guys that you ever know, because you can't be proud if you only got one eye. You know, it's like you have to be humbled every day. You know,
right.
It's like how cool could you be if you only got one eye?
Right.
So, yep.
Huh. Very cool, man. Talk to me about you getting run over, man. That's gotta suck. Like.
Yeah. Well, what happened
like,
was
like training accident, right? I mean. Hey, I've been in the military, you know, a long time. You hear about that stuff, but you never meet anybody.
Yeah, we were heading down to Fort Dix. I had one of my vehicles was broken down, so we got in front of him to make sure he didn't get hit, you know, make sure he was safe. And then I had to back up my vehicle because it was on the highway. And I've only worn my Kevlar in a Humvee probably 3 or 4 times in my whole career. And I'm backing him up, and all of a sudden, instead of him hitting the brakes, he hit the gas and ran me over my whole right side of my body. And then he turned, and then it ran over my head.
Jeez.
And but, you know, I guess, you know, God had another plan, because I just got up, shook it off, you know, and I was like, all right, that was sad. You know, that was weird. And I didn't realize I had any damage until I got to, you know, I guess because maybe I was running on, you know,
adrenaline.
The epinephrine in my body was probably just jacked. And I got down to Fort Dix and slowly over the next 2 weeks, I finished my AT. I didn't go home. I finished the AT because I'm like, you know what? I'm going to suck it up. I slowly every day I started losing more vision in that eye. And then when I got back to Jersey, you know, when I got back off AT, I went to see the eye doctor. And he says, I could save your eye. And I was like, okay, cool. He's like, do you have health insurance? And I'm like, no, because me and my wife weren't married then. He says, well, son, if you don't have $5,000 cash, I won't even touch you. And within a week, I was totally blind in that eye because I had an ocular stroke.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the funny thing is, because when you get hurt in the military, they send you down to something called medical hold. Instead of going to drill, you go to medical hold. So I had to drive like an hour and a half away to go to drill with one eye. I'm like, really? I'm like, I got one eye, and you're going to have me drive an hour and a half just to go sit in a drill hall for a weekend? And they're like, yep. So I sat there. I was in that medical hold for like almost 14 months maybe. And then they finally gave me the notification, you know, we're medically discharging you. And that's when the whole, you know, I lost my career and my eyesight in like within a year and a half time. And that's when the depression set in.
Wow.
But I keep coming back.
Right.
Whatever struggles I have, I'm always going to come back.
Very cool, man. Well, glad you're here. And your story just inspires people. I see you posting all over Facebook and the, you know, in the veteran groups and all that. And, you know, you're the guy that people rely on. You know, so definitely there's another plan. The vehicle didn't take you out. So glad that you're here, man. And you're definitely on a, you know, the comeback story for sure. So,
yeah, but now, like I said, I'm actually helping people come back, you know, even if it's not fit, you know, mentally. I help people in my, you know, the work that I do now. I help people that are going through physical problems and help them. You know, that's why I have clients that are in the NFL, Major League Baseball, WWE. I help them get back to health, you know, even like after a torn ACL, torn MCL, and anything like that, I help them come back. And I run $1 million store. Even when I was in the military, any place I was ever stationed at, or I always had a job either on post at the PX, at the GNC, or at the health shop, or in the gym. So I always was always around health and fitness my whole life. Because the first magazine I ever read was like an old muscle magazine with Arnold Schwarzenegger on it. And I was always just, you know, enthralled with the muscle and fitness. So that's when I just started getting into, even, you know, most of the books that I've read are mostly people would think would boring, but it's a lot of health and fitness books. And you know, I still have like six magazines that come to the house every month that I still study.
Right.
And, you know, and I've always, and then when I got to New Jersey, that was the first job that I got, was working at as a general manager at a GNC store. And that's what I've been doing ever since. So when I'm not helping people with mental health, I'm helping people with physical health.
Wow. Okay.
So it all kinds of goes together. You know, the mind, the body, and the soul, it all kinds. If one area is weak, the other two are going to suffer.
That's true. Yeah. I do a lot of work with resilience. You know, we talk about mental, physical, social, spiritual resilience, you know, and it's all about mind, body, soul, you know.
Yep.
If one of them is not working, you know, then the others suffer. Sure.
That's true. Yep.
Sure. So what's next for you? What's 2019 looking like?
2019, like I said, I want the book to drop first.
Yep.
And then hopefully, like the next week, I'm actually going to be on, the week of Christmas, I'm going to be on a Facebook TV show that has like 3 million viewers. And
awesome.
The whole thing is going to be dedicated just on addiction. And then the 17th, I'm actually going to be on a radio station for veterans, talking about, you know, telling my story and helping them with addiction. And hopefully get some more public speaking gigs, you know, being able to sit there and talk to people, you know, and hopefully going to be able to shoot down to San Diego and hang out with Marshall Gillen and Robert Garcia and do a couple talks with them guys. And I'm also I'm also in talks with doing Clever Talks in April of 2019, because it's right here in New York City. So, yeah, so like I said, I just try to help as many people as I can. It's never about making any money, because like I said, I'm retired already. They medically retired me, so I'm retired already. You know, now it's just about, you know, right. When I met Gary, I was like, Gary, can you just give me a nugget? You know, I want something I can go home with. Just give me a nugget, because I met him. His dad owns a liquor store here in Jersey.
Right.
And I actually got to go meet him down there at his dad's liquor store. He's like, well, the only great piece of advice I ever can give you is that legacy is more valuable than currency. And that's when I started thinking, you know, what kind of legacy am I going to leave? You know, like my uncle, he died a multimillionaire. And he said, son, I have all this money, but I can't buy back another day. So now it's just about creating legacy for my kid. You know, I got a little six-year-old, so, you know, what kind of, you know, I want to be able to say, you know, my daddy did something great for other people.
That's true. Yeah, I got, you know, I look at my five-year plan, and I'm like, man, I wonder if it's enough, because I want to help so many people, because, you know, I was, you know, abusing alcohol, you know, for the first 7-8 years of my career. You know, we were always drinking, you know, and then once it starts, like, affecting you, you know, you go to, like, you know, ADAP classes or, you know, whatever is the military's version of the alcohol and drug dependency program, you know. So you go to the classes and this, that, and the other. I don't know. I mean, it helped for a little bit, you know, but I get the chemical addiction part. Like, I totally get it. You know, you're chemically addicted, whatever. But I think it's more than that. Like, they only, like, the chemical part. Your body's, like, what about your, like, heart's addiction? What about your mind's addiction? You know,
well, see,
because I remember the fun stuff. Like, you know, like, you're at a bar and you're just, like, having so much fun, right? Like, you are having a ton of fun, you know? And the emotional part, like everybody do shots. Let's do shots. Like, you're having so much fun. Like, that, I believe, is what keeps people addicted. It's not, like smoking, yep, nicotine, got it. But it's the stress reliever. You know what I mean? You're breathing, taking a moment, you're by yourself.
In my opinion, I think, because they say that your adulthood is predicated on the first 8 years of your life.
Right.
So if you've gone through trauma, you know, between that, you know, those first 8 years, most people are going to go into drug as addiction as they get older. Because then they're trying to squash that stuff that's always, you know, so it doesn't rear its ugly head again. And a lot of people that, you know, they start getting sober or clean, there's a difference between being a drunk and a dry drunk. A dry drunk is an asshole that doesn't drink, and that, which was I was. That's where I was at. I was still an asshole, but I just didn't drink. But then when I started, they call it working the program, where you actually start doing a lot of inner self work. And you start realizing, you know, then you have to actually change your whole life. So quitting is one thing, but just most people that quit and just they don't drink for a while, they're pretty much going to go back to it eventually, because they're not changing. Like you said, they're not changing their mindset. And I think that the mindset is the biggest thing that, you know, people have a problem changing. It's not the drugs or alcohol. It's the mindset.
Right.
And who you're hanging out with. You know, because, you know, you are the average of the five people that you hang out with the most. So if you're hanging out with losers, you know, if you hang out in a barbershop long enough, eventually you're going to get a haircut.
I love that.
So, you know, if you know what I mean? So if you're hanging around with guys that are drinking and you're trying to stay clean, eventually, you know, you're going to fall. Oh, I can just have one. And then you're off to the races again.
Right. Yep, 100%. So... But I did, man. I hung out with with people that were just like me. You know, they wanted to drink, they wanted to have fun. You know, there were guys that just they partied every day, every weekend, you know, whatever. And it just
that was me.
It became too much, you know, like I needed a break.
Yeah.
You know, and but it started affecting my job. You know, I'd go in smelling like alcohol, or I'd show up late to work, and then you know, it was bad. You know, I'd get sober for a while, you know, and then I just have one beer, you know, I just have one, like, you know, and then it would turn into a whole bunch more. And I really,
say you like, I was talking to a friend of mine. He said, like, you know what? You never get drunk off the fourth beer. It's always the first one that's going to get you drunk.
Right.
He says, if you don't have the first one, you never got to worry about the fourth one.
That's true. But I really believe that these, you know, in like the program, you know, it does tie into, you know, your feelings, your mindset, you know, whatever. But I just believe that a lot of times they're just focusing on the chemical addiction part and not the emotional part, because there is an emotional attachment. Like, you know, if you have a bad breakup, like, give me a bottle of wine and I'm going home, you know. When you have a fight, you're like, let's drink. You know? Like, everybody does that. Bad, and they go and smoke, or they go and drink, or they, you know, feeling bad about themselves, you know, so they just grab a bottle of wine and some ice cream and, like, sit on the couch, you know. Like,
boy, that's what any
people think about.
It's kind of like you get people that, if they get stressed out, even if they don't drink, they'll go grab a gallon of ice cream and eat it. You know, it's all the emotional. They act out emotionally. No matter what the addiction is, you know, if it's drinking, it's drugs, it's food, they're going to act out whenever there's a stressor in life. That's when they're going to act out at that time. Whether it's a good stressor or a bad stressor, they're going to act out.
True.
You know, because most people, I got promoted at work. Good, let's go drink. I got fired at work. Okay, let's go drink. You know, so it's whatever. It's just a stressor. It's not whether it's good or bad. As long as there's a stressor in there, you know, that's what they're gonna. That's gonna be their fallback, is going whatever they're addicted to.
Yeah, 100%. And I've been sober for a few years, and yeah, I almost don't trust myself. You know, I probably could. I'd probably have a beer or something like that. Probably never. You know, probably wouldn't happen. Maybe it would.
See, not me. Like, I know that if I have one, I'm going to jail. You know, if I have one, I'm not making it back.
Right.
I'm not coming back. And, you know,
right.
even me and my wife, you know, she's very much behind me. Even if we go out for dinner and I order a Diet Coke, she still has to taste it for me to make sure it's safe for me. You know, it's like she can't even cook vanilla cookies. Because vanilla extract is actually alcohol.
Huh.
I can't have Scope in the house because Scope is like 8% alcohol. You know, and I don't ever want to go back to where I was. You know, because like where I'm living now, I'm actually 2 miles away from the same place that I was living in a car. And I don't want to go back to that. So it's kind of like I put all these safeguards. Like when I go over to my cousin's house, I'm like, all right, is there anything I can't have? You know, like, okay,
right.
I can't have the salad dressing because it has red wine vinegar in it. It's like, okay, you can't have this. And I think a lot of people that are, you know, struggling, you know, is when they go to cousins or they go to people's houses and somebody offers them a drink. They're like, okay, why not? I'm just going to have one. And then it's off to the races again. Yeah. So, you know, and there's times where me and my wife have went out. And I've ordered a Diet Coke, and, like, we went out a couple months ago, and they gave me a rum and Coke. And she's like, really? This is bullshit. He's ordering a Diet Coke, and you give him a rum and Coke? So, you know, and it's happened a couple times since we've been together. So I guess I just have to be hyper aware. You know, like, if somebody buys cookies from somewhere that it's not homemade, I can't eat them because I don't know what's in them.
Dang. Well, I mean, you know, if it means that much to you, then I guess you just do it, right?
Yeah, you know, because I always think, you know what, I've been clean, you know, going on 31 years. It's like, do I want to lose everything? You know, do I want to be homeless again?
Right.
Do I want to lose my wife and my kids? Is it worth it all? I'm like, no, it's not worth taking a chance at all. But I guess I'm just like really, really strict with everything. So, but you know, it works for me.
That's good though. It's good.
Yep. And now it's like the funny thing is like I have so many people that follow me now. I feel like if I screw up and I go out, I'm letting a lot more people down than just myself. You know.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, I get it, man. I was speaking at a veteran event earlier this year, and I was with somebody, and they're like, "Hey, so I've seen like two or three of your posts." Because I was posting about it was right around the time like the NFL was, you know, the season was kicking off. So everybody's talking about kneeling, you know, during the national anthem, like all that, you know. So I just posted about it, you know, put my own opinion on that, you know. And someone was like, hey, you know, if you're going to be this, you know, high profile, you know, Facebook, social media, like this influencer, you might alienate a lot of people by posting certain opinions that
yeah,
are not
and it's true.
Popular, you know. I'm like,
yeah.
Really? You know, and so
and
I had to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just give him my
like
opinion.
Like one of my friend Josh, he was saying, you know, this was a couple of months ago when I first started doing my Facebook Lives. He's like, I listen to your lives, but I won't share it. And I'm like, why? He says, because a lot of times you use inappropriate language. He's like, and I have a lot of kids and a lot of family that are on my page. And I was like, wow, I never thought of it that way.
Hey.
You know, and he's like, also, you know, there's a lot of people that might want to book you in churches and want to book you at like corporate events. And if they're sitting you cursing and everything, they're not going to want to have you. And I was like, you know what? I just never put two and two together. He's like, yeah, because every time, you know, I do a Facebook Live, it's seen by like 1,500 people. He's like, and they're probably sharing it out, but, you know, maybe that one person that wants to bring you in, hears you talk like that, and they're like, no, maybe I'm not going to bring that. He said, so, you know, you have to really watch out, because, like, he's like, whether you like it or not, you're becoming an influencer. And I never thought of myself that way. I would never think of myself that way. But he's like, you know, whether you like it or not, if you have over 5,000 friends on Facebook, you're more than likely going to be an influencer sometime in the future. So you got to watch what you post. You know, and what you say. And I never thought, you know, like you, I never put two and two together.
Yeah. It was something I was like kind of taken back. You know, I'm like, what? Like that matters? He's like, dude, it matters. Because like I know for a fact that I won't post like, you know, talk like I'll post something that says, you know, God's got this. God's got this. It's something I believe. It's a picture.
Yeah, me too. I do the same thing.
Everybody knows, right? But I don't go in depth and like into my beliefs and like into scripture and like all that stuff. You know, people know I'm a Christian and I leave it at that. I'll never post anything about politics. Not ever. I'll never post anything about like deep, deep religious stuff. I'll never post anything about theory or like whatever, like, you know, like flat earthers. I'll never post anything about that. Well, like just don't post anything that can be considered like conspiracy or like a portion. I won't post anything about that. I'll never tell it. You know, I just things I won't talk about because I know it is such a divisive topic, and I just don't do it.
Yep.
I'm aware of that. But it's like all I posted was
like me. I'm just trying to stay in my lane. You know what I mean?
Right? Because all I posted was like, this is ridiculous. I can't believe we're even talking about this kneeling thing anymore. Who gives a crap? Play the game. Like, why are we so consumed about who's kneeling and who's not? Like, just shut up, play the game. Like, I don't want the media to cut it. I don't want Trump to cover it. I don't want, like, just shut up. Like, just play the game. You know, like, that's all I see. I don't want to see anything else.
I think the biggest thing is when my 13-year-old became, joined Facebook. And I'm like, wait a minute. Everything that I put out there, he's going to see.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going, and it's been 3 years now. He's 16 years old. So that's when the things started changing. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't be posting this, you know, the stuff that can be divisive. Because now with everything being so PC, especially in school, you know, it's like I just don't want to be part of drama. I don't want to do drama. I don't do drama at all anyway. And I'm like, I don't, all these people are arguing about this and the Facebook. And I'm like, you know what? I'm working on myself. I don't have time to be worried about, you know, this or that, this, who doesn't like this one, who likes that one. You know, I'm working on myself. And that's all I can worry about. You know, if, I think if everybody just worried about themselves and their family, the world would be a lot better place.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's like, as long as I'm bringing my kids up to be respectful and to do the right thing, that's all I can, that's all I can really handle.
Yeah. So what's your message for those that are struggling with drug addiction, alcohol addiction? You know, what is your message to them?
That you're never alone, that there's people like me out there that are always willing to lend an ear. You know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, to just to know that people out there, there's people out there that actually care about you. And, you know, because a lot of times we're, you know, we're big, tough soldiers and I can do it on my own. I'm all And then you get home and you're, you know, you feel all alone. And I'm just wanting to be that voice out there that's saying, you know, it's okay. You know, I'm here if you need somebody to talk to. Just reach out. Because people that are prideful become statistics.
Yes. Yep.
So that's my biggest thing is, you know, people, just to know that there's people out there that, that care like myself. And that's why I'm putting myself out there. So, you know, if I can get help, you know, you can get help also. You know, and I also have my pages open. People can message me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I'll always respond.
Love it.
You know,
love it, man.
Because some people, you know, like some people, they'll put stuff just on Facebook just to be seen. You know, where I rather, like, if, say if your birthday comes up, I rather just message you and talk to you. But, you know what I mean? Because,
yeah.
And a lot of guys, you know, might be too prideful to say something on Facebook, but they can always message me. And if they don't live, like, I got a guy that I'm helping. He lives in Alabama, and I'm actually helping him. It's called the Jeff Chambers Project. And he's actually, I'm helping him get healthy so he can get a brand new kidney. He's getting a kidney transplant next month.
Awesome.
So, and we don't even live in the same town. You know, we don't even live in the same state. So, I'm willing to talk to anybody at any time to help them out. So, my ear is always available.
Great, man.
That would be, you know, that's what I would have to say.
Yeah. No, it's awesome, man. It's a great message. So as we start to wrap up the show, we do a shameless plug. You can plug friends, quotes, websites, Facebook, whatever it is that you want the listeners to know, this is the moment. Shameless plug, go.
Okay, even though I don't like plugging and talking about myself that much at all. If people want to follow me, it's just Richard Kaufman. And I also have a fan page because now I'm over 5,000 friends, so I had to start a fan page. And the new book will be out. It's called A Hero's Journey from Darkness to Light. And the proceeds, 35% of the proceeds are going to a nonprofit. And the reason why I did 35% because 35 first responders on average commit suicide. And they can, if they hashtag the Comeback Coach, it'll come up on my Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, all my social media. And that's it. That's all. I don't have anything to plug. Just, you know, just talking, just me. That's all I have to plug is me. And if you ever want me to come and speak, I'm more than willing to come and speak. And I also do webinars and stuff like that. If people can't afford to bring me in, I'll also do a webinar with their schools or whatever I can do to help. That's it.
Perfect.
That's simple.
So give us one nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action today.
One nugget. Thing I would probably say is just don't become a statistic. That's the biggest thing is, you know, take action today. Don't become a statistic. Don't become one of the 35. And if you're not a first responder, it's 108 a day. That's every crazy. 5 minutes, somebody becomes a statistic. So just don't become a statistic. Reach out and for help.
That's crazy.
That's it.
108 suicides a day.
Yep. Every 5 minutes.
That's crazy.
So, you know, that's why I always tell people, you know, if you don't, the best reason to take action is so you don't become a statistic.
Yep.
So that's 100%. About it.
Awesome, man. So I want to thank you, man, for coming on the show and, you know, telling your story. And you're going to do amazing things in this world, man. You know, the second
Well, thank chapter, you for having me on. And
right? The second chapter I of your hope, life is going to be amazing.
I thank you so much. And I hope, you know, there's one person out there that needs help that are actually will take action today and not be a statistic.
Absolutely, man. 100%. Yeah, man, I really want to thank you for your time, your vulnerability, your transparency, and you are you're a solid dude, man. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
So Life Transmission Radio listeners, an amazing guest influencing the world around him. If you know someone who is battling alcohol or drug addiction, get them in touch with Richard Kaufman. He is the guy to change your life. If you know someone is struggling, send them this episode. I want you to subscribe, rate, and review Life Transformation Radio wherever you are comfortable listening to podcasts. If you subscribe, rate, and review, that is how we know how we're doing. So as we close, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold in your heart. I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.